welcome to your new life and our new times in what has been labeled as humanity's greatest leap in evolution. Dr. K is here to assist you with holistic tips and tools, clearings and activations for your vibrational upgrade. Dr. Allison J. K. has been working as an energy medicine practitioner for 20 years, having lived in Asia for 10 years to study subtle energy. People refer to Dr. K. as the lightning bolt due to the high voltage of the work she does on behalf of assisting you to thrive in mind, body, and spirit. That is the greatest backdrop to life on planet Earth right now.
What else is possible? Indeed, that is the nature of everything that I do, all the air I breathe, and behind this show. So on the bottom right, y'all, there is a bunch of new links, and one of them is to take a quick survey to let me know, especially for my regular listeners, or if you're just coming in and you like what you hear today and you want to become more involved just by listening every week is all I mean. You can click on the quick survey asking you guys what you want more of and less of. So today's show is about meditation, and it's following up on the last week's incredibly profound show with Bruce Lipton. If you didn't get a chance to listen in, where he's redirecting us as a cell biologist and a stem cell researcher and a medical school teacher, including some of that stem cell research being done at Stanford, and he left the Orthodox science to break out on his own and start talking, much like Amit Goswami, who I also interviewed back in the archives. You can look for that one too. Also leaving Orthodox science to work with beliefs and how they affect the mind-body connection and our health. And today we're going to be dealing with the mind as a direct result of wanting people to have a more active understanding and ability and less resistance to meditation, because as most of my regular listeners know, the 10 years in Asia, part of the reason why I went and lived there, which I returned from 3 years ago, was to explore how to work with subtle energies. I had already been meditating for about 10 years. I've been meditating for 20 now, teaching it for 17. And the Western mind, the modernized mind for that matter, is really consistent with the way that it deals with meditation, the way that it views meditation, the reasons why it would quit. So that's what today's show is going to be addressing, and really getting some clarity where we've been using the very mind we're wanting to rewire and quiet and sidestep that has been blocking us from having a meditation practice. And if you even just sit and meditate, that's considered a victory. So there's also a very physical component. This is all part of what's in my next book about the different layers of the outcomes of meditating. And that's not really what today's show is about. Today is more the nuts and bolts of meditation. So we're going to go ahead. I'm going to wait because a lot of you are still at work. And we're going to do some of the talking now, and then the actual guided meditation instruction will be in the second half of the show. And it's not a guided meditation where it's like a hypnosis where I'm taking you down into a tunnel or a cave or whatever. It's just us sitting and doing a meditation together, and I'm just guiding you back to your breath. And I'll be giving the necessary instruction when I feel it out there, like I do in my yoga and meditation class, and like I do whenever I teach meditation, when I sense the minds are getting restless or they're getting sleepy or they're getting resistant. I'll just guide you through the typical reactions a typical westernized and or modernized mind has to meditation. So in the West, we have this understanding that everything's about goals, and we approach meditation with that mind. I mean, how else are we going to do it except with the minds that we are conditioned, that get shaped from our cultural backdrop and our family backdrop? And being the country that we are in America, and then for the international listeners and the modernized countries that are doing the modernized thing of go, 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 and have basically westernized somewhat, or I would say Americanized, because it's not all of the West that's into the American version of productivity and capitalism. We have this mind that's used to productivity. We have this mind that we rely on for that productivity to help strategize, to help plan, schedule, figure stuff out, that cognitive, the mechanical functionings. Yeah, you guys got it, the machinery. That machinery gets so overused in our modern day that it's really a challenge to wind down from. And so when we first sit in meditation, we are actually observing just how active our mind is. So if we're used to going and going and going and taking care of tasks, and you may not think, this is a key point here, you may not think, I don't really go that much. I'm not really like what she's talking about. I know there's other people around me that are a lot busier. I know to take time for myself. I know to go to the beach. I know how to relax. I know how to go out in nature. I do that. I get massages. Okay, excellent. Self-care is there. Slowing down is there. One of the things that I heard that was more interesting than others when I lived in Asia, said both from the Chinese culture and the Indian culture at different times, was Americans love to burn their central nervous system out. And what I understood that to mean, and after a bit of discussion to make sure that my perception was on the same wave as what was intended, was we don't have a sense of like energy management here. We don't have a sense of like the conservation of the banking like we do of money, in the investment like we do of money. It's the very same thing with energy. And the taxing, the debit that happens on our energy that comes, that flows up and down our central nervous system that we have when we even just simply run out into traffic, and not literally in our bodies without a car, but when we run out to do errands on our bikes or motorcycles or in a car, and what we deal with just to get simple tasks done that we may not even think are a big deal, that has a certain debit on our energy. And so if we're constantly taking care of stuff, that has a cumulative debit on our energy. And Bruce said this last week in the interview, and I have this in my book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, the statistics behind, he gave the stat at, and I think this is a more recent one than what's in my book, 90%, actually I have the same stat, come to think of it, sorry, 90% of all doctor's visits are due to stress and the perception of stress. And if we, I'm going to use that segue, the perception of stress is key, because our bodies won't react to stress if we are doing something that we don't perceive as stressful. If Lori finds managing her household stressful, the kids, the dog, the husband, the TV, the phone, everything is loud, and she more enjoys a quiet atmosphere, she'll have her interpretation of the environment as stressful, and then her central nervous system will respond, and the biochemistry flowing after that interpretation of her perception of the sensory environment through her five senses, what's going on in her environment, it gets run through her perceptual machinery in her mind, and that's where the interpretation occurs of, oh, noise equals stress. Whereas Melissa might be in the same household, but she grew up learning, sensing from her parents, her own parents' beliefs in her, then what she got used to, a loud family that loved to celebrate together and sing and clap and dance and talk loudly and laugh. And so she would have, from the sensory equipment, the five senses picking up the noise in the environment, her perceptual equipment would then interpret, oh, noise equals good. So there would be no sensory, pardon, stress response in her body, because there is no interpretation of the stress. This is a key reason. If not, if you look at, if 90% of all visits to the doctor are stress related, and then stress is something that our minds interpret, it's not something our body naturally goes into. We have to first have a mental interpretation that we're not even aware of. If we're not monitoring, if we don't have a practice that helps us observe our minds and helps us undo our conclusions and beliefs that are already wired in there at the subconscious level, like meditation and like the theta healing that I do to help with the subconscious beliefs getting unwired. Meditation also helps us be more in the observer role instead of the reactor role. And we unwire beliefs and can rewire new neurological pathways. So if you want to help yourself with even not just the stress levels, but if you're already beyond that and you're into an impact on your health, the meditation itself will shift your body into a biochemistry that favors health because it will calm. Now I'm coming back to the central nervous system, What I consider myself to be a specialist in, one of the things in the way kind of to group everything I do together, is subtle energies. Subtle energy is what travels up and down the spine as the central nervous system's energy. The central nervous system is also up and down our spine where the chakra column is. And at each chakra is the biggest gift. Thanks to Candace Pert's work, she proved it with scientific measurements. And I go over this in my book too, What If There's Nothing Wrong? And if you're interested in the book, you can look down in the bottom right and there's a link to order it from. It's on Amazon too, What If There's Nothing Wrong? It takes all the science and puts it together and presents it in an understandable way about how our mind is behind everything that's physical, and then how to work with our mind. All of the major nerve plexuses, where there are the most receptor sites, that are that then respond to the signals the mind sends out, are gathered at each chakra. So the nerve plexuses have a bunch of nerves at each chakra that have receptor sites that are receiving or taking the response of the mind's interpretation of the sensory data from the environment. So the breath work that we do in meditation, the posture that we use in meditation, helps to slow down the mind-body feedback loop. So that brings our biochemistry into a slowed heart rate. This, I prescribe to my clients a meditation program when they have high blood pressure and they're open to it, because it has been proven to lower blood pressure quite easily, actually. So one of the legs of the eight limbs of yoga is pranayama, which is the breath work, right? And one of the specific pranayamas that I love is the alternate nostril breathing. You can look that up on YouTube. That's an even quicker way to shift the body into a calmed physiology. So if you tend to have panic or anxiety attacks, that's more triage work there, alternate nostril breathing. But that's pranayama. That's one of the eight limbs of yoga. If you look in the, I'm trained as an Ashtanga yoga teacher, and the eight limbs of yoga, one is pranayama, one is are the asanas, the body postures we do in yoga classes here in the West, and five of them are meditation. There is so much to gain from meditation. So there's so much quiet that can happen. And then there's so much space created that you end up, what it feels like in the physical is like you'll get up from the meditation and you'll just feel like your room is bigger, the house is bigger, and you're breathing more easily. And you just feel more expansive instead of kind of contracted within yourself, feeling small and as if the world's coming at you. Instead, you feel more like you're putting yourself out onto the world. So you're able to expand instead of contract. So the meditation, when we approach it with our everyday busy mind from being productive, that's considered, I'm going into now the distinction between gross and subtle consciousness. My students love this distinction. And I find that Buddhism, in particular the Tibetan Buddhists, are really good at understanding consciousness, because here we have an understanding. I mean, new science is really starting to help with the measures at the more subtle levels. of consciousness. And again, I remember I said that I consider myself a specialist in the subtle energies. So subtle things that work with subtle energies are crystals, essential oils, flower essences, energy healing, meditation, yoga, qigong, acupuncture, reiki, reflexology. Okay, subtle energy, not the big physical energy. And so in the West, because we have had our scientific tradition geared towards measuring the tangible, and that's what's been the equipment for most of our scientific endeavors up until just the last 20 years or so with the new science, and because of the main religions in the West, we're geared towards the more physical, as I've talked about on many shows and as is in my book in the intro. So when we sit down, if we actually get ourselves to sit down in meditation, it's with this really physically geared mind. That's considered to be beta brainwave state, which is the most rapid brainwave state. And so in the more subtly geared understanding of consciousness that Buddhism is, and it's considered mind science, not the science of mind like we have churches for here in the West, but mind science, the science of the mind. Their distinction is when we sit down to meditate and we have that everyday mind, we're in gross consciousness. And it doesn't mean yucky gross. It means gross as in unwieldy, physically big, large, almost like a sense of clumsiness because it's so hard to manage. And then you'll get this in just about 10 minutes when we go into the meditation. I'll guide you through the different layers of the, when we go from gross to subtle. The next layer in is then, so we pulled in off of our environment, we become less extroverted, which is definitely demanded of here more in the United States than it is, say, in the Chinese culture, as I've spoken about on my radio show and go into depth in about in my book. That extroverted brainwave state is beta, and it's tuned into the gross consciousness of what's out on the physical environment. And you could say that because of the values in our culture and the foundational beliefs we're founded on, we have a more physically geared society. So even when we're out there, we're more tuned into the, and this is all comparative from my 10 years living in Asia and experiencing the difference. We're more geared to the physical. So it's part of almost like a shift in enough life experience that would gear somebody in the West to say, wait, there's more to life. I want to get to know that part of life. That would cause someone, and I don't mean necessarily through the psychic avenues like psychic readings or channeling. I mean like knowing only, I mean, that's one aspect of it, but knowing that there's a more subtle, fine consciousness out there instead of this outwardly turned, interacting with others, getting stuff done. And so as we sit down into meditation, we're gearing off of that physical gearedness. Like if you think of all the presentations we do in business, you think of all the community and teamwork that is done in order to get the kids to the different sporting events and to get them coached and to get the fundraisers handled and managed and all of the business aspects of running a business and business presentations and doing business and all the movement we do in creating more business ventures across the country, flying and driving and you know what I mean. One of the contrasts that can be observed after living amongst the Chinese cultures is they're more still. It's not to say that they're not productive, and it's not to say that the competition that's there, and it's not to say that they don't drive fast. again, I'm just trying to draw a contrast because there is a different way to do it, and other cultures are doing it differently. And from that contrast, learn what else is possible. Hey, so it seems almost like either somebody goes through a health crisis or somebody knows that their mind is just so loud and they want to have help working with how loud it is. Or there's been some experiential learning, whether it's been on a vacation or through a book or through a friend or in a crisis in the family where they've been opened up to the softer, quieter, more mysterious elements of life. And so want to explore that more. because a mind that's really, really loud, and this is going into the title of the show, Common Misunderstandings and Why People Wouldn't Approach Meditation. A mind that's really, I'm going to use the word ego now, ego gripped, isn't going to want to be called on its stuff. And that's what happens when we go into meditation, right? We start to take a more detached view. And if you look on the cover of my book, it's a woman meditating on top of a mountain, looking down below. And that's the imagery I use with my clients and students too, is it's like this observer in us, the higher self, is at a higher view, looking down on our ego mind or our smaller personality self and its choices. So the ego mind, or the smaller personality self, for those of you who need some background, is more like what people will say, oh, she's like that, or he's like that, and label us with, and that's known as our personality. And so the ego mind is what we go to for our interactions with others. It's where we come from when we're managing our lives, scheduling, organizing, structuring, figuring stuff out, socially interacting, and stuff's coming out of our mouths without even being present really and thinking about what we're saying, but just reacting off of what other people are saying, where we're not grounded or centered in ourselves. That's all mind energy, and that's all from a dominant ego mind. And so somebody who is in that circle and living from there is going to have more resistance towards setting up a meditation practice, and they're probably not even going to be drawn towards it because they're living in the throes of the ego mind or of the mind. And you all know what I'm talking about. Those of you who have been attracted to the show understand what I mean. And this is one of the ways for the 100th monkey element to enter into our society, for really those of us who are doing this lightning work and raising our vibrations and clearing ourselves out of our ego minds and our dense beliefs. We're able to support the backdrop shifting from the attention on. Let me give this as an example. That big trial that happened 2 weeks ago from whatever went down in Florida. I'm basically unplugged from the mass media, that kind of news. Because if you'll notice, the collective desire to focus on it and go, ooh, ah, no, oh my God, can you believe, and how wrong and how bad and what an injustice and how unfair. Do you see how much there is plug-in in a non-monitored, non-observed mind, ego mind, person who doesn't have an awareness that they're not their thoughts, they're not their personality, they're not their ego. They just go around with their thoughts dominating their lives, plug into the mass complaining about something and how much they get pulled in and triggered and attached to giving their opinion and their voice on how unfair that is. What an injustice, right? So there's a collective backdrop in our society about pain and suffering. If you turn that TV on and you look at those commercials, especially at late night, how many of them are geared towards medications? You've got to be suffering at some sort. There's suffering going on. Everybody's suffering. So much stress, so much stress, so much debt. Not enough, not enough, not enough. All of that is the loudness of our American societal backdrop, right? How do we unplug from that? Or how do we counteract that? How do we shift? How do we create a different world? What else is possible? By exactly what this show is about today in particular, work with those thoughts. Unplug in the process of meditation. Learn over and over and over again how to detach from the power of the thinking mind, because there's other minds beyond the thinking mind. I don't mean to imply craziness, but I mean there's a higher self to connect with. There's a higher self that is connected to a source of guidance and wisdom that is well beyond the personality mind. And that personality mind, it's like a trap in a way, and it's like a cycle in a way that you can't get out of until you've had certain life experiences to trigger you to, whoa, learn to manage it. Other than that, you'll stay in the old mind dominant structures with the mass media and with the mass paradigm. We are not our thoughts. You'll notice in just a few minutes when we go into the meditation, if you can observe yourself thinking and pull your awareness back to your breath, who is doing that? Who's pulling the awareness? off of the thoughts and back to the breath. That's what I mean by there's a higher mind. There's other minds. I don't mean to pluralize it. There's a higher mind. And so that higher mind is quieter. And in the yoga practice, on the yogic path, it's known that that higher mind is where the word yoga comes from. Yoga means to yoke with, connect with, yoke with our divine self and divinity. So in five of the eight limbs in the path of yoga are about meditation. And meditation does not have to be about spirituality. This is definitely what I talk about in my second book, because there's so many improvements at the machinery level, at the cognitive level, just with concentration and focus and the retraining of the neurological wiring and the pathways that your thoughts typically go down. I mean, it's just like the biceps or the triceps we train in the gym. You can retrain where your attention goes and how much attention and focus you have just by this training that you'll experience in just a few minutes. That's why I love it, because it's so basic and there's so many multiplying effects. It is the most frequent meditation technique that Buddha taught before, like all the different schools built up around it. I love what Spirit Rock does. I love what Vipassana or insight meditation does. And you gain insights from meditating, but it's not the only kind. There's three different main types of Buddhism, depending on geographical location and culture. And then each of those have their own styles of meditation. This is the most basic meditation without going into any kind of formality that Buddha taught. And it's, you could call it attentional focusing, as B. Alan Wallace does, who's also been a guest on my show. You can check that out too. It's mechanical at the first layers and levels of the outcome of meditation, where the retraining and the focusing occurs. The second level is more calming and quieting. And the third level is more where we do that yoking and we connect in with the higher self. So you could have started a meditation practice and had it for a month. And as your busy life took over, you could have had your busy life take over. And what that really is the mind fighting back, saying, I don't want to change. This world of subtle energy, this world of my higher self, this world of other consciousness. No. Many people like to stay enclosed in the ego mind because it feels to them safer as they're in a body on planet Earth. There's a lot of fear about exploring the mind in our culture, in particular in the West. When I say our culture, I explore that in the book too, so I'm not going to go into it here. But it's almost like comparatively, so if you take the backdrop that I've talked about before on my show of Buddhism, that it is to the East, and the basic Buddhist premise is all human minds are neurotic. We don't have that here. We have, almost as a basic premise, ignore the mind, hide from the mind, run from the mind. It's too elusive and there's madness in it. So there's also a certain level of, and it's known as the hard problem in science. So there's also a certain level of running or hiding from the mind in us thinking and feeling like there's going to be madness in there. Well, yeah. And the Buddha says it's the most basic premise. Then, so here's how you deal with it. Here's meditation, y'all. You know, so it's not a big bad monster, but there's a cultural level of stigma attached to the mind here in the West that doesn't exist in the East in the same way. And so that kind of mind could be frightened as it starts to in a first month or first 3 months of meditation. And it's really good to be connected in with a regular teacher, an advanced meditating practitioner, so you know what it is you're finding and you're encountering as you're meditating. I do that. I have regular students at my yoga meditation class, and I have private clients who want individualized meditation and yoga instruction. Some are just on meditation, some are just on yoga. But like for me, I meditated for 5 years without a teacher, and I knew I was getting in too deep and I was starting to touch places I couldn't understand on my own, and I needed a teacher. So I backed off until I found a teacher, the next teacher, after the first teacher who set me up on the program that I did for the first 5 years. So it's not that there's some boogeyman in there or it's bad, but you need somebody's wisdom who's been there ahead of you. And so a mind that's been practicing for like 3 months and starts to sense where it's going and there's quiet and there's calm and peace, it might not want to change. It might like to stay, and this is very typical of the ego mind to want to stay in the dominant position because it gets what it gets. It wants what it wants. It's like a little child. And our backdrop of quality customer service and capitalism and marketing and getting what you want and paying for in order to have what you want, and you're supposed to get what you are told you're going to get from buying that product, creates a certain ego mind that's really spoiled. And so it's almost like Madison Avenue advertising is in capitalism is the exact opposite of what meditation is, what the minds are that you find, if I were to draw a black and white dualistic contrast. So there's a whole host of reasons why the pull would be not to meditate. Because then you could start to pull yourself out of what everybody else is experiencing around you. You could start to say, wait a minute, I'm going to be different. I mean, you could have all these thoughts that you're not even aware that you're really feeling, but it shows up as, I'm too busy to meditate. It's a lot that goes on under the scenes. So if you can sit your butt down to even just meditate for 10 minutes a day, instead of the 30 minutes, because your mind might, and this is another folly that we make here with the goals, and this is how I started the show. We have like the goal to sit down and meditate for 30 minutes. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do right here. I am starting my healthy lifestyle. I'm going to have my smoothies. I'm going to get up earlier in the morning and set aside that time. And I'm going to have that 30 minutes meditation. And in the second week, you're already failing. You sleep in with the snooze button. So now you only have 20 minutes and you're like, you get on yourself. You think you've done bad. You're not going to have enough time to meditate. So you just say, forget it. And the old lifestyle takes over. Well, stop setting such high goals, hey? If you can even sit down to meditate for 5 minutes, getting yourself to call your mind on its desire to say, no, I want what I want. That in and of itself, no matter the time spent, that's considered the first victory in the beginning stages of meditation. Yeah, you guys are feeling it. Yeah. It's a spoiled little errant child, y'all. It really is. And as you've heard me say on us, the regular listeners have heard me say on other shows, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got from my first meditation teacher was do the exact opposite that your mind wants to do. So if it wants to sleep in for an extra 30 minutes, get up 10 minutes earlier. It's not allowed the kind of discipline with the cultural backdrop that we have. We have very spoiled gluttonous. It's in my press release for my book, Obese Minds in Our Country. Our cultural backdrop at this point is supporting obesity in the mind. It's part of why I'm doing the work that I'm doing full time now since I've returned to the States the last 3 years. So how do we work with the obesity? Why don't you guys go ahead and get comfortable? And if you're not able to allow yourselves to meditate now, you can come back and listen to this. You can download it. It's a free download for you. I had this on my website for purchase, a downloadable MP3 that's a guided meditation instruction. Because when we hear guided meditation, a lot of times we think it's like that hypnosis thing where we're going down into the forest with the waterfall. That's not what it means. It means I'm guiding you through the meditation, instructing you. So you can download this and use it day in and day out if you want to until you're there. And you can take it over on your own. This is concentrating on the breath is something that is a challenge for a very busy mind. So sometimes when I have the more intellectually geared, busier clients wanting the private meditation instruction, I'll give them a mantra as an intermediary step so that the mind still has a job, a task. So keeping that in mind, still let yourself experience what this meditation is like. And again, this is the most basic grounding in the body meditation Buddha taught. It's not about leaving the head and leaving the body and going out and daydreaming. It's actually about learning how to be here and have more presence. So sitting down now, you've already had some time to draw your attention in off the external environment. So I'm going to act like you just have come in to the room to sit down and meditate. So you're coming in off your external environment, whether it's driving or it's, of course it's driving, work before that or kids before that or meal before that, the busyness that I was talking about earlier. So you sit down, simple cross-legged position. You don't need to go into full lotus. Why be an overachiever? You don't even need to go into half lotus. You can just sit in simple cross-legged position. And if halfway through the meditation, your legs start to get fall asleep, just switch them. No need to set up unnecessary battles, you know? And that's part of the deal with us, with having such a goal-oriented culture, and that, you know, this is how it gets done, and I got to do it right, and I got to get it done right. And the goal here is not that. So taking the core area, this is a really good conditioner and strengthener for the core. Taking the core area, it's an inch and a half below the navel. That word that I just got out of my mouth was navel. And you want to pull it, the meat in that lower belly area, up and then back towards the spine. That naturally should be bringing your shoulders back. And so your shoulders are not your earrings any longer. Your gaze is soft. Your eyes are gently closed. Your palms are, if they're face down, you choose, then that's going to be a more introverted meditation. If your palms are face up, that's going to be a more receptive meditation, open to more insight. I could tell you a couple of mudras, but I don't want to overcomplicate things. I want to get in at the most basic level here. Mudras are finger positions that you could also add in. So you're sitting here now. What do you do next? So coming off the external environment at one level of gross consciousness, that's beta brainwave state, coming down into seated meditation posture. Which when you're in simple seated meditation posture, that's the next level in of consciousness at the gross level. Now we're looking at our body. We're not calling our bodies gross. It's just a physicalness that the subtle energies don't have, or subtle consciousness doesn't possess or isn't made of. So the next level in where we bring our awareness to now is our breath. So go ahead and take that core that's been pulled up and back to the spine, and you want to inhale. So you're inflating your belly like a balloon. Up goes the chest inflating. Now the trachea neck region, you're inhaling through your nostrils, not your mouth. Nostrils have a natural filtration system in them that detoxify the air we breathe in, keeping the mouth softly closed. Get to the peak of that inhale, like it's a wave. Wave now breaks, and now exhale. So the chest concaves and the belly deflates, the balloon loses its air. Yeah. Inhaling. Belly inflates. Chest inflates. Trachea and neck seems to have more space because you're getting air in there. Nose now. Get to the peak of that inhale. When you're ready, start letting it come out the nose. That is called diaphragmatic breathing, because we're breathing with the diaphragm down in the belly. This host of studies done about what deep breathing does, again, for the physiology, shifting the biochemistry into the parasympathetic nervous system instead of the sympathetic, which means calming. So what do we do now? Asks the goal-oriented monkey mind, used to being used to do something or flutter about with its gadgets and its texts and its emails and its YouTube and its, yeah. What do we do now? What's the next task? What do we do now? So it's paying attention to your thoughts, which is the next level of subtle consciousness. Breathing and thoughts are now considered subtle consciousness. So as the thoughts come in, which they will, especially more rapid fire now, because you're sitting down and observing your mind, especially for those of you who are not meditation practitioners, go ahead and inhale. And exhale. When the thoughts come in, all you want to do is just go, oh, thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Let the thoughts float by like they're a leaf on a river, and the river's current carries the leaf away. The thoughts just float by. If you need to,
You can pick those thoughts back up as soon as the radio show's over and figure the stuff out and chew on it if the mind needs that. But you'll find that it won't after we clear it with the meditation. So it's just a matter of redirecting, pulling off of the thoughts as soon as you're aware that you're thinking, which you won't be all the time. At some point, maybe 3 minutes of a bunch of thoughts about this weekend and what you're going to do. Oh, wow, I'm not supposed to be doing that. Thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. So I'll guide you through. Go ahead and continue on with what we're doing. Inhaling, or wherever you are in your cycle of breathing. Thinking, pull off of the thoughts. Let them float by, let the river take them away, and come back to your breath. Reignite where the breathing process, the breathing cycle. If you lost track of where you were in the breath and you weren't consciously breathing, just start over with the inhale. Thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Thinking, pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Thinking, pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Good. Little more presence. Can you feel it already? Yeah. And sometimes the thoughts will be more sticky because it'll be a juicy train of thought, not just a single fleeting thought, like my back itches. But what did he say? What does he mean we're going to be doing this weekend? I can't wait to see him. I can't wait what we're going to do. And you don't want to come off of him. Or you could be reviewing an event that happened this morning where you're going over what you said and how good it was, what you said and how bad it was, what you said and what you could have done better and what did he mean by what he said and what did she mean by that look she gave you and did they misinterpret you and why didn't they understand what you meant in that conversation and just reviewing, yeah, and getting lost in it and letting it take you away like this tidal wave. Thinking, pull off of the thoughts, and come back to the breath. And that was a suction cup like a plunger for the toilet because sometimes it's required, yeah, because the force, the momentum behind that train of thought is stronger. So that's where the element of detachment comes in so that when you're in life off the mat, you can actually use these skills gained in the process of pulling off of the juicier trains of thought. Coming back to the breath. When you're in a situation that's kind of explosive or reactive and you're triggered and it's a usual place where you have a usual reaction and it gets you upset, it's the same thing as here's a usual train of thought. Do you tend to review your performance when in conversation with others or do you tend to project into the future with worry and anxiety? The mind only goes backwards into the past and projects into the future, but it can't be here now. What we're doing is pulling off of the past and off of the future that's in our thoughts so we can be here now with presence. So what will happen is in that constant redirecting of thought, excellent, you guys, this is the brilliance. I love teaching this. So when you're in your everyday life and there's attachment to, oh man, I hate when he does that. Oh man, I hate when she does that. Oh, I hate when people do that. And you want to teach him a lesson. And you just, that you get all bodily involved and attached to the situation instead. And come back to the breath. You'll be able to manage your reactivity and it won't be there eventually. This is the way you undo it. We're developing musculature, just like we're in a gym lifting weights. It is muscle. It is absolute machinery that can be retrained. Inhaling at the belly. Chest. Trachea. Nose. Exhaling. Nose. Trachea. Chest. Belly deflates. Core goes up and back to spine. Empty. Inhaling. Thinking. Pull off of the thoughts. Come back to the breath. Continuing to inhale. Thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Finishing your exhale. Inhaling at your own pace. Thinking. Pull off all the thoughts. Let them float by. We're making the mind serviceable now. If you want to, you can pick those thoughts right back up as soon as we're done. Come back to the breath. Reigniting the breathing process if you forgot where you were. Now your mind's wondering what to do next. It's looking for a goal, a task, an assignment. Yeah? We got over the initial restlessness. Why I kept redirecting thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. So much, because that's what happens in the beginning. You see your restlessness as you settle in and it starts to get quieter. The mind starts to wander around like a little kid, like, okay, well now what? Constantly going, constantly expecting things, constantly expecting the stimulation. This constant expectation of stimulation is exactly what is meant by Americans love to burn their central nervous systems out. Any thought flips a response on in the central nervous system. It moves energy. The more thoughts that we have, the more energy moves up and down our central nervous system, the more communication occurs in our body. The less thoughts that we have, the quieter. Inhaling. Exhaling at your own pace. Sounds in the environment typically get more observed when we're meditating. They seem louder. Sometimes it's a challenge to pull off of the attention that our consciousness wants to focus on them with, because we're expanding our consciousness. As we go into the more subtle levels, our consciousness is more expansive. It's stiller, more still. So in that increased stillness is expansion. In that expansion is we pick up on more and we're more sensitive. This is also cumulatively over time how we increase our intuition and our psychicness, because our sensory thresholds decrease and our perceptions, our perceptual, how do I say this? Our consciousness is able to pick up more in the environment in this expanded state. it eventually bleeds over into everyday life if we choose for it to, yeah. Pull off of the thoughts in reaction to the stimulus in the environment, for example, and come back to the breath. Redirect. That's all it is. A lot of the thoughts come back to the breath. Good. You're now at about the second level of meditation where the quietness starts more. We've moved beyond the everyday mind and its dominance. Now the quiet starts to increase. It's the second level I was speaking of. Inhaling, or wherever you are in your breathing cycle, continue. Okay. Off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Okay. Off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Can you see the steadiness that is a result of this practice? No matter what's happening around you and outside of you, you can stay steady and centered and present in your body, not floating outside of it, lost in your thoughts, in your body, breathing here with more presence because that expansion of that consciousness has happened. You're in the more subtle planes. So it's more expansive and you're more here now with presence. This is also when you might tend to get sleepy, because you're now dropping into alpha brainwave state. So you want to straighten up the spine. Readjust your legs if you need to. Your body's in mind, because it's slowed into the alpha brainwave state, is thinking sleep. Because the next brainwave is theta. And that's the REM level. So alpha is where we are when we are starting to drift off into sleep. So the first level is dealing with the restlessness. The mind, constant recall, redirect. The second level is then the expansion, and in that expansion, relaxation, and in that alpha brainwave state, and in that, the body wanting to go to sleep. So to exert an element of discipline in our practice, we want to make sure that spine is straightened, and the core is pulled up and back, and the shoulders are back, and you're honoring that ability to have discipline in your practice. Not giving the mind what it wants by wanting to go to sleep and just following along with the mind, but exerting some discipline. And then if you find that you really are sleepy because of what you touched in on during the meditation, you have the space, go nap and honor that, being kind. I'm not talking about disciplinarian, harsh. I'm just talking about discipline. Thinking, was allowed to chew on, pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. See how predictable the mind is? This gets really fun when you start to use these observations you make of your own mind, and you start to use them when you're out at dinner or at social events with others. You can see, and this is how you unhook from the collective hypnosis or the collective trance. You come back to the breath, and out of that thought activity, inhaling. Exhale when you're ready. If we were to continue on for another 8 minutes or so, we'd be entering some more sacred space where we'd be connecting with the higher self. Even 20 minutes a day is fantastic to start out with, because can you feel the softening? This is what I meant, my regular listeners, when I said when I returned to the States, it felt so sharp to me because of the amount of mind dominance here. You feel the softness when we work with the mind's judgments of me, of my voice, my tone, my instructions, of you, your posture, your itch, your ability, your inability to meditate, judgments of meditation itself, expectations of how things should get done. All of that noise is sharp. Yeah, it's not soft. So if we live in a system, a mind-body-spirit system that honors the mind, we're honoring that sharpness. If we work with it, we can delve down the sharpness by the force of the spirit. In the Chinese culture, as I've said many times, Shen, the word in Chinese for heart, and the word in Chinese, Shen, for spirit. So closing now, as I do in my yoga meditation class, bring your hands in front of your heart chakra, in the center of your chest, in between your breasts. Open up the three middle fingers, so that just the wrists and the thumbs and pinkies stay together, so you're forming a bowl or a cup. With your hands, look down into that, because you're flushing your head with your heart energy. And I'm going to go ahead and let you just stay in that space, come out of it whenever you're ready, and feel the softness and carry it out there, please. Many, many blessings. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to more. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us and allowing yourself this time to expand and become more of who you're here to be. Dr. K has a range of different offerings of her vibrational upgrades at all price points, including free. So for more information, please go to www.alisonjk.com. Dr. K's first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is available on Amazon.com. Dr. K also has a weekly clearing and activation call that is attended by her most advanced clients and students, an important activity in keeping themselves aligned and their vibration high. We'd love to have you come and play. Om Shanti.